Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Wake me up before you go-go. I am Simon Cardy and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. Matty P, what's
Hello.
Happening?
I'm sitting here staring at a Google Hangouts call, waiting to roll on with big opinions.
Big opinions? Oh, he's gonna come charging in today. Jesse, have you got big opinions?
Sometimes, but more often than not, no.
Yeah, sometimes we don't want to hear what your big opinions
exactly.
are.
I'm more used to that, to be fair.
yeah, there's certain things that we just can't discuss that would put you in jail, I think, actually. but sadly...
Wicked.
You're here with us. Sadly? Is that sadly? I don't know. Should... Let's write into IGN UK...
Or what the on the, fuck?
Got on the email. IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com. Do you think Jesse Gomez should be behind bars? That is the first piece of feedback I would like this week, please.
Right.
Let's talk about Guardians of the Galaxy, the game, because I don't think we'll have any criminal opinions on this, because I think we're all on the same page here, that this is a very good video game. Mm-hmm. I think in some ways, surprisingly good. Not surprising for me, because if you notice if you remember even a few weeks ago, I did my hands-on preview, and I said, this is a very fun video game. And people should be excited for it. But I feel like there was this kind of combination of the trailers maybe weren't showing off the best bits of this game and also the whole backlash from Marvel's Avengers, which obviously did not pan out like most people wanted, despite being my game of the generation.
Yes.
Guardians of the Galaxy is just an old school, single player, story driven campaign game that's just very good. I know, Matt, that you're kind of semi in love with this game a bit.
So it's one of those. I don't want to be overly disparaging about Crystal Dynamics' work on Avengers, but obviously I wasn't super hot on that. Like, there were bits about it that I liked, but it never came out together. But I think I'd be mildly embarrassed if I worked on that team, looking at what Eidos Montreal have achieved here, because they've made what I think most people wanted from that Avengers game, which is
100%.
A really tight, story-driven, team-based game where you like fully embody not just kind of like the character, but also kind of like the comic mythos. Like, it is really, really good at transforming the cosmic side of the Marvel universe into kind of this playable play space.
Yeah.
Which is led by character and story. I think, like, it would probably be categorized as an action RPG, but I think it's better to think of it more of kind of like, almost weirdly like a Devil May Cry style game. Like, it's much more linear.
Yeah.
It kind of is that, and it has kind of a bit of Uncharted to it as well at times. Like, it's.
You can
it, like,
tell
like
there are studios that worked on Tomb Raider. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a bit of Tomb Raider. And there's, like we said before, there's a little bit of Final Fantasy VII Remake in there. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as much you go on as you initially think, but it definitely has that sort of appeal to it. Like, Jesse, you've enjoyed it quite a bit as well, haven't you?
Yeah, 100%. I played it, like, a little while back, and I was... When I got into it, like you mentioned before regarding the trailers and stuff, I wasn't entirely sold by it. When I think of like what Guardians is now, it's kind of what I wanted Avengers to be, just like, you know, a no fuss single player experience with a good story and just a lot of personality in it. And I was surprised I found that in this with, like, you know, my 15 hours or so playing the game. And honestly, I think I enjoy this take on Guardians more than what I enjoyed with the film version. But saying that, I don't know if this video game version of the Guardians is more closer to the comics, because I've never actually read any of the comics. So I'm not too sure.
I guess that's where I come in which case, yes. The thing I really like about this is that it is like, it's their own take on the characters, but it does, I think, draw closer to the Marvel comics than obviously James Gunn reinvented those characters for his movie. Mm. And it's kind of the comic book versions of Guardians of the Galaxy have shifted since James Gunn's movies came out, and those versions are a little bit closer to the movie now. And they do this with pretty much all of the characters, because they obviously gain renewed popularity through the MCU.
Yeah, of course.
So kind of like the whole kind of music element of James Gunn's movies wasn't really a thing for Guardians previously. You'll have noticed in the, so obviously every Guardian in the game has different costumes you can choose, much like they did in the Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And you'll have noticed that some of those are kind of almost like a blue tunic for Star-Lord, and all the other characters have similar things. Yeah. With what a lot of people from the MCU might recognize as the Ravagers logo, but was actually the Guardians of the Galaxy logo, because in the comics they're much more of a super team, like they, like the X-Men are, basically.
Okay. Right.
You know, they had a like a unified identity, and then the film kind of came along, and now they're a little bit more ragtag.
Yeah, it just seem like a bunch of mates and like just doing pirate stuff, to be honest.
Yeah, which is kind of what this, you know, the game riffs on that a lot, while also having elements of kind of like the both the original and newer interpretations those characters. But I just think you'll notice that like Rocket and Drax are fairly similar to their film counterparts, just because like that's
fairly what their
close
character
anyway.
Is, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Drax is a little bit more stoic in the comics, or at least historically was.
Yeah.
But Gamora and Star-Lord, I think, are the ones that have the bigger kind of personality changes for the game.
I always thought there was meant to be some sort of like romantic connection between the two, but there wasn't really any of that in the game, I guess, which was kind of refreshing just riff off the film, right?
Yeah, I actually, you know, obviously we won't spoil any story beats here, because story is so important to the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd say it's surprisingly story heavy for a game that's released in 2020.
That's the thing that hit me most. Like, I messaged you last night saying this is basically, like, yeah, it's a comic book run in video game form. Like, it's a surprisingly long game. Like, it's probably about 15 to 18 hours long. Like,
well,
it's
like 18 hours now. Like, I think it will be 20 hours by the time I finish it.
Yeah, like, you're getting towards the end. You haven't finished yet. Me and Jesse are finished. And yeah, like, it is a story driven game in every way. Like, and it's just like, I feel like we say this a lot about, like, it's a surprisingly heartfelt story. This genuinely is, like, every character has their moment. One moment near the end almost got me. Like, there's some very good, like, not quite, like, Naughty Dog level, like, Last of Us Uncharted level stuff. But, like, approaching that at times, like, it's just very well written. And they balance that humour with those heartfelt moments so well. Like, it is such a character-led piece. And then, like I said, you get these moments of humour, like, the jokes are very good, and then like you get fights soundtracked by Rick Astley and Wham, which is just, you know, it's just like, we should probably move on to the combat, because it's not like, from watching it, it's not the most exciting combat to watch.
Yeah.
And it's in the moment, it's kind of, I think it's fun combat. It's not reinventing the wheel in any way. Like, I feel like once you get the grip of it, like, it's not as complicated as maybe a first made out, but there's enough going on for it to never be boring, I think.
Yeah, I think the combat has a slight pacing issue in terms of not the individual fights, but over the span of the game. You actually unlock stuff quite slowly. So it's funny, I'm closing the final parts of the game and I've just unlocked like some of the final moves for one of the characters. And so Star-Lord's guns have elemental powers, and I've only really just unlocked the final element for the gun. And I sort of feel like it means that the first half of the game you're using very, very limited skill sets, which means that the combat feels very, very simple at the start. But when you get past the halfway point, and especially massively backloaded, the combat actually has an awful lot of tactical kind of depth to it that is surprising. Mm-hmm. Like, it does this thing where in the environment it will start dropping areas where you can tell, like, oh, Drax, can you pick this thing up and hurl it at this person? Yeah, or can Rocket throw a grenade into this area, which will cause it to explode and take out a much wider area of people? And I kind of wish that that was a bit more evenly distributed or even a little bit more front-loaded, so that that tactical kind of depth got offered to you much earlier. But in terms of, like, when it's running on all cylinders, it's not Final Fantasy VII's in terms of depth, but it has that kind of the enjoyment of fitting all of those characters together and getting them to do their roles at any one time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like, I think I wrote my preview, when it's all kicking off, it's kind of like juggling fireworks, and when you get it right, like, you get this, like, amazing sort of, like, display of, like, firepower, but then, like, it can easily go wrong. Like, I wouldn't say it's a difficult game, but it's a little unforgiving at times. If you make a couple of wrong moves, like, you can go down, like, your health bar, like, you're never going to increase your health bar or anything. You can you can do it minorly with a perk system, it's never going to drastically improve. Like, you can go down pretty easy, especially to some of the more, like, difficult enemies you come across later on. And I think, like I said, without spoiling anything, and see, Matt, you can speak to this much more than I can, because I've barely read any Guardian stuff, but, like, this is a full-on, like, I feel like people, this is not, apart from the costumes and the music, that's as much as it has in common with the films, really. Like, this is very much a comic book adaptation. Oh, and, God, like, without spoiling anything, like, the deep cuts and some of these characters I've been reading about, I'm like, why are they, like, what? I did not expect this.
In its third act, it's, like, it's surprisingly just introducing characters all over the place. Like, there's, the main thing that they've kind of focused on in the marketing is Lady Hellbender, you know, a real deep cut for comics that even I wasn't super familiar with. Halfway through, there's, like, a real great character moment where it turns up. And, like, if you're a fan of Guardians, like, I think you'll love that. But the last third has, like, those exactly what I expect from a Marvel comic, where, like, someone turns up to help. And they're one of, like, the real fantastic kind of mythological kind of characters.
Yeah.
That you're just like, I would never imagine this being brought into mainstream kind of Marvel media, and yet we've got this. And it does that, like, three times in a row, like real deep cut characters. Yeah. And you're just like, as someone that loves kind of the Marvel kind of mythos, and also how weird the cosmic mythos is, I really like that it's completely out there. It doesn't try to, like, make the cosmos realistic. It doesn't try to make it like a Mass Effect sci-fi. It's completely,
it's the planets you visit are
bonkers.
Like, the representation of, I don't know if this is straight from the comics, but the representation of nowhere in this world is a giant brain, like a city inside a brain, basically.
I mean, that's what it is in the MCU. It's just it never really focuses on that.
You never really, like, and that, I think that shows a lot, that that is what it is in the MCU, but I don't remember that, and I don't really ever remember them really. Like, it's just not a thing, really.
But that gets driven into the game, though, isn't it? Like, that's something you remember from that location that makes it stand out just a little bit more. Cardi, have you gone back to play more of the game? Because when I finished it, I was surprised to have Tom Marks, who reviewed the game, like, message me and saying, like, hey, there's some, like big choices in dialogue that, like, leave big impacts.
That's the thing, like, so, there's also a dialogue choice-based system, which I didn't... See, I don't know how much... I don't... As far as I know, the main storyline is never going to waver from what it is. Like, it's going to stay across that. But whole missions can change. So there's, like,
exactly.
I think it's the third or fourth mission is a big example of it. Like, you can choose basically one of two options. Like, you can choose, and this option is between, I won't say the context of it, but you choose between Groot and Rocket for something. And if you choose one of those options, you play that whole level as a big fight that goes on for maybe like half an hour of full-on action.
Yeah,
if you choose the other option, it turns into like a slow stealth mission with one fight at the end. Like, it changes that whole level in a mad way. Like, it's not going to change necessarily how the story goes, but your playthrough will definitely be different to someone you chose the other way. And I just think it's interesting that adding that stuff, and there's lots of little choices along the way that add like little like funny outcomes. And,
yeah,
I haven't gone back to see like what the different choices I could have made and how much it impacts it yet.
Yeah, for sure.
It does that very Telltale thing where things that you say and the way that you treat people, it seems to be then like they might do a favor for you later down the line, because it will come up like
exactly
in the top corner. It will say like character X liked the way that you treated them and now is here to do this.
Yeah, that can make your life easier, definitely.
Yeah, there was a moment like nearer the like final section of the game where, you know, obviously there's big fights happening throughout and then something happens where like a favor gets called in essentially. And I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that at all. And it's just weird to have something that I did maybe 8 hours ago come into play near the end of the game. Yeah. It's a bit Deus Ex. It's just funny, like
there's
that.
So many like different examples of fake outs in this game that I'm enjoying. Like, yeah. And like the first time it happened, I was like, okay, that's funny. And then like the fifth time it happened, I was like, okay, how many more of these are we getting? But in a good way, I was like, I don't know what they're going to do next in this game. Cause like, like it's in the first hour of the game, like I think it's in the first half an hour of the game even, we've put up like the first like big boss fight they tease in the game and it just doesn't happen. Like there's a funny cutscene instead and you're like, oh right, I guess I don't have to do this fight, which is yeah. I don't know, it's just, I just love the tone of this game. I hope it sells well because I really would like another one, and more generally just more games like this. Like,
yeah,
I know we talk about all these like, and some of my favorite games are massive like 100 hour RPGs and open worlds, but sometimes like a 15 hour story, you just can't beat it.
Yeah, for sure.
There's like this template they've made, like I'm not necessarily even after another Guardians game, I'd just like to see them do another Marvel game that requires like a team of people and they can do this. It's a 12 issue comic book like epic with like a mad bonkers end section that like I just want to see them do that. Like, it would be perfect for like an X-Men kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
X-Men or event. Just let them do the Avengers expansion and turn that game around for good. Who knows? Because all
we really had was just a, you know, good Spider-Man game, and then obviously, you know, Avengers as well, which was like mixed reception. But then it's just, it was weird playing through like a good Marvel game because there hasn't really been one like that to that capacity
apart
for
from
ages.
Spider-Man, I don't know. Yeah, you got Wolverine years ago, but yeah. I never played the Telltale Guardians game actually, but
that's the only Telltale game I haven't played, which is surprising really, because I, you know, that should have been right up my alley. I own it.
Could be a banger for all we know.
Could be, yeah. You know what? I think actually, so I don't think I think it's a little rougher than reasonably rougher than the Spider-Man games. But you know what? I think I might have enjoyed this more just because kind of like this game does so much just to kind of make sure that every level feels like really distinctly unique.
Yeah.
Like it's surprising how many things this game asks you to do. Like some of it is like very like Tomb Raider style platforming it. Some of it is kind of like these weird, slightly Final Fantasy like combat encounters.
It's got all sorts of weird as well, you know, a little bit Star Fox like that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it kind of takes all these bits and it never really, I don't know if it betters any of those games, but they all come together to make just a very solid like 8 out of 10. Mm-hmm. It's just a very good game, not reinventing the wheel. And I just really, really enjoyed it. It's up there with my games of the year. Like I would be surprised if it's not in my top 5 at the end of this year. Mm-hmm. Like I'm near the end of Inscription, I think, which by the way is vying for number one spot. If we talked a lot about Inscription, I think last week, like, yeah, play Inscription if you have a PC because that is an unbelievable game. But Guardians is, I think, it's taken a lot of people by surprise. I think a lot 100%. Of people expected it to be Avengers 0.2 and it's not.
Yeah, so, you really have to play it and just not watch the trailers because it will leave with a different note.
It's just a very good story. So, write into IGN _UK feedback at IGN.com. What do you think about Guardians? And do you want more single-player games? Tell me. I want to know.
I'm sure everyone does.
One of the greatest single-player games ever made, Jesse Gomez, is arguably Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
Although it does have a multiplayer or co-op if you play Mercenaries. But the single-player campaign...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest campaigns ever made. And now, through the miracles of modern science, you can play it in virtual reality, which, by all accounts, is very good.
100%. Like, it's going to sound so dumb, but honestly, from all the games I've played this year, I think Resident Evil 4 might be, in VR, my number one, which sounds mad for a game that's, you know...
It's not mad because it's you speaking, and you're obsessed with Resident Evil.
Yeah, I guess so, but that's the thing. I've played near enough every single, like, imaginable port of Resident Evil 4, and it's one of those games that, for me, I could just dive into, switch my brain off, and just, like, coast through. And everyone has those type of games. Mine is just Resident Evil 4, but I've been hyped for RE4 VR since day one. I think Armature Studios has done a great job bringing Resident Evil 4 to the Quest 2. Like, control-wise, it's as smooth as butter, and it really does just change the entire experience of the game.
It's... Tell me more about the butter. Like, is Leon, like, palming butter? Like, isn't that going to loosen his grips on the gun if he's got buttery hands?
It's odd how much it changed the entire experience. And Resident Evil, like, is a series that's, you know, it's no stranger to change. And I think the game that's seen the most change in terms of the series is Resident Evil 4. You know, it started on the GameCube with standard controls. Mm-hmm. Then you had that Wii version that had the really precise aiming method that worked surprisingly well. And VR is just a completely different beast. Like, you're no longer trapped with the Ganados. They're trapped with you because, like, you're essentially the Terminator in that game. You're dual wielding fucking eggs and throwing them at them and then so taking out your shotgun and stuff.
Dual wielding eggs?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Would you say that's made the game consider it, like, easier? Not that it was a hard game to game, but, like, ammo scarcity is always a thing in Resi. Like, yeah. When you're not relying on ammo and you can just chuck anything at people, does that make the game easier?
It's weird because it's a game I know like the back of my hand, but there were still moments which surprised me when I was playing it in VR, just because it's a lot more intense, and I think you're taking more risks when you're playing in VR because you're getting up close and personal to every single enemy. You're, you know, taking out your pistol, shooting one enemy whilst knifing another who might be behind you and stuff. You're doing all these range of movements that you were never able to experience in Resident Evil 4, let alone any other Resident Evil. And they've just made good changes to the game as well to accommodate VR players. You know, instead of having to go into your inventory every time you want to heal or switch weapons or do anything else, Leon now has functional holsters. I can, you know, use my controller to grab my pistol from the side, maybe take up my shotgun from the back, or if I want to heal an item whilst I'm knifing another enemy, you can do all of that at once.
It sounds like your version of heaven. You've put on this headset and you've gone to heaven. You're just taking on people with sacks on their head with chainsaws, and you're kind of just dancing around and throwing eggs at them.
It's pretty much that. It's an entirely different experience to what you would be used to playing Resident Evil 4. And not saying it's the most complete edition of Resident Evil 4, because it isn't. It's missing mercenaries. It's missing a few extra single player modes and stuff that, you know, have been standard throughout previous Resident Evil versions. But it's weird seeing the scale of everything that you weren't really able to appreciate back when you played on consoles, looking at, you know, these dingy castles or the village at nighttime, picking up treasures and looking at them. Same goes for puzzles as well. Everything is physical. You know, you used to just have to go through like text menus, and now you're kind of, you know, you're pushing buttons and you're like grabbing things and shifting them around. It adds a momentum and weight to the game that it didn't really have beforehand.
How does it handle, like, the inventory? Because, like, do you actually have to physically move around things to fit? I'm just imagining you're just, like, you've got this suitcase you're carrying around with you, and you're manically trying to, like, close it and stuff things in there. Like, that would have been a cool way to do it. Like, if it's, like, yeah, you can't physically close it anymore, like, instead of having the grid-based system.
It's not exactly like that. So the attaché grid-based, like, Tetris system is still there, but it's really intuitive in VR. Like, you're just, you know, you're pointing at something. I want to combine this herb. Bang, bang, bang. It's really easy just to use. It's like the most approachable way to play Resident Evil 4, weirdly enough, now compared
really?
To I think so just
In
because
VR?
Well, like, just it, motion sickness stuff aside, because there are like comfort options, but control wise like, you're not having to use a complex controller anymore. You're really just, you know, using a grab button and then pointing and shooting, and it is like I said, you're basically the Terminator when you're playing it, because you're that deadly.
Maybe if you're you, because I've seen your footage and you're just kind of, like you said, like, you know, like playing around and basically taking the piss out of every enemy in that game. Like, it must still be difficult. Like, the boss battles must still be, like, I don't know, hard in that game.
That's the thing. Like, I'd love to hear from someone who's never played Resident Evil 4 before. And,
that'd
like,
be a mad
into...
way to play it for the first time.
It would, but it would be interesting to see, because it's a game that literally anyone who... Everyone knows about Resident Evil 4. Everyone knows, like, what some of the boss battles look like and how the game controls and stuff. But, you know, there's been changes to that as well. Like, the Del Lago boss fight in the lake and stuff. You're no longer, like, trying to fucking throw harpoons at the enemy. You've got, like, an actual harpoon gun this time and stuff. And it is a little bit scary. And that's what surprised me, is that there are moments that, you know, did make me jump when I was playing it. Because you know every single beat for that game. But when you're in VR, everything's so up close and personal. It's like... You have those weird regenerator enemies that, like, you know, make those really dodgy sounds. They have huge teeth and they're really creepy. And seeing that in VR, it's like when you see Darth Vader in VR for the first time, you're like, this is weird.
I've got two main questions, the ones that everyone wants to know about Resident Evil 4. A, is the broken butterfly as satisfying to play in VR as it should be?
Yes. The reloading in that game is pretty good, man.
Can you do some of like the trick reloading, like you can do in other games, where you like throw the magazine in the air and catch it?
You absolutely can. You can go fully good. John Wick, like John Woo, with this, and just go crazy with it.
Nice. B, is Salazar as small in real life as we always imagined?
He is surprisingly tiny.
Is he a little
tiny
freak?
Yeah.
He always creeped me out. Why is he dressed like that?
Yeah.
Who does he think he is? Napoleon?
He looks like a 10-year-old, but he's also like 32 or something mad like that. It's very bizarre.
He's an odd character. I mean, I'm personally not going to play, I don't think, just because
yeah.
I know Resident Evil 4 and I don't have a quest to play on, frankly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's another very valid reason.
And that's a shame, though, because it is exclusive to Quest 2. Like, if you just had a normal headset, you can't play it through Steam VR or anything else. You have to have a Quest 2, which is a bit of a bummer, but it works surprisingly well.
I love that I spent X amount of 100 on a quest to play Alex, and it like a year later it was fucking redundant. Like,
yeah, that's the thing with, it's not even called Oculus now, right? It's just Meta, isn't it?
Well, the company rebranded to Meta yesterday.
I'm not going into this. I'm not
the metaverse.
It's still
we're not talking quest. About it.
No, the, my point being is that VR headsets seem to cycle a lot faster than consoles do. And
yeah, it's
when
it's
you're
weird
paying
having like
X amount of 100 for
stuff.
Them.
Yeah.
So they've done this new version. Like, I feel like people always have a go at Skyrim for coming out a new version like every year or two.
Yeah.
I feel like Resident Evil 4 has done it more than that. Well, to be fair, they do it in more interesting ways, because actually every time they re-release it, it is different. Like, how long before we get the Resident 4 treatment of Resident Evil 2 and 3 remake? Are we getting that soon, do you think?
That's the thing, though. Like, with Resident Evil 4, you know, it started out as a GameCube and then eventually a PS2 game. You know, it's old. It's an old ass game. And if the Quest 2, and it's the same with GTA San Andreas, it's like, people I'm sure would prefer like GTA 5 in VR, but in terms of having that kind of, just free moving, like untethered VR experience, if they're only capable of being able to bring these older games into VR, I still think that's pretty exciting. Like, that's why I'm looking forward to GTA San Andreas.
I was more like saying, like, we've got this new version of Resident Evil 4, like, are we getting the full remake? Do you think we'll, like, is that inevitable that we're getting the remake of 4? Like,
probably they've announced it, haven't they?
Yeah, the remake for 4 is definitely happening.
Did I miss that official?
I don't know if it's completely officially confirmed, but, like, it is happening.
Is it one that, I feel like with Capcom, everything's leaked or heavily rumoured, or, like, you know.
Yeah, they had all those leaks before, but, I mean, it's pretty much, like, accepted that Resident Evil 4 remake is happening, and that's what's mad as well, because you had this VR remake and now they're actually going to be remaking 4 itself, you know, giving it that, you know, 2 and 3 remake treatment. Mm-hmm. Which,
well, maybe if you don't have a Quest, because I imagine a lot of people don't, maybe we've got some great VR footage on IGN.com and YouTube that Jesse captured. Maybe watch that and see, you know, you might just get a kick out of it, who knows, because I know you got a kick out of kicking some zombies, didn't you?
They're not technically zombies, though, Cardi.
Come more on. Old games being brought back to life. The GTA trilogy finally officially announced. I'm far too excited about these, because I don't know. Like, I think they'll hold up.
Is that like nostalgia cloud in your mind? When was the last time you actually played these games?
So I have Vice City and San Andreas on my PlayStation.
Yeah.
And probably about 2 or 3 years ago, I booted them up. And I was just like, I can't, these don't control well anymore. And then that is the major, like, still story-wise and graphics-wise, I'm not worried. Because I know that, like, graphics, they're going to date. And story-wise, it's still going to be great, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And mission design-wise, for the most part, is going to be great.
Well, Rockstar haven't changed their mission design system for a very long time.
That's
so
true. And that's why, I think that's the thing that's most excited to be about this GTA trilogy, which is out in what, only 2 weeks now, and
it's like 12 days from now.
12 days, there we go.
Shit, that's not long at all, man.
No, that is less than 2 weeks, actually. That is one more than 11 days, Jesse, actually. Mm. But I can't wait to play these, because Vice City, San Andreas, two of the best games ever made. 3, I don't have much of a connection with. I never, 3 was one I always played at friends' house. I never actually owned and played 3 myself, but I've always been told has a very good story to it, and I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, that's the major thing, that when they announce these remasters, like, I hope it's just not a, like, you know, adding some shaders and it looks a bit better. The fact they've fully redone the control scheme to control like GTA 5, that is the biggest thing for me, because trying to control those old games to me, like, was such a backward step. But I can't wait to get my hands on these, and I'm gonna play through them all. Like, there's nothing to stop me playing through all 3 of those games. Like, whether I do them straight away, like over Christmas, like,
what are you gonna start with, you think?
I'm gonna do them in order.
Okay,
I'm gonna do all 3 in order, but San Andreas is my favorite out of the 3.
Yeah, same.
But you know, save the best till last, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And I'm just more interested, because I so many vivid memories of playing San Andreas for the first time on PS2 and being like, this world is absolutely huge. And I want to see if it still feels that big, or just like compared to playing like 5 and Red Dead 2, I'm just like, well, this place is tiny. But
I think one of the things you might find is like, it feels like longer in terms of like, there's an awful lot of that game that is highways just going through like the middle of nowhere, whereas it wouldn't surprise me if like GTA 5's map is like the same size, but GTA 5's map is denser because it's set within the same city. Whereas to create that kind of statewide feel, there's big stretches between the cities in San Andreas that is just kind of like, because you remember a lot of those missions required you to drive like across state, especially kind of after the first few hours.
Yeah.
And with GTA's old school save system, which was just like, if you failed a mission, brutal, you start it again. And just that drive across. So I've never finished San Andreas because there was too much driving in it for my liking.
So I remember being stuck on, is it the last mission or the penultimate mission of San Andreas? The one that involves Samuel Jackson heavily. Like, I remember that being really hard when I was young. I don't know if it is.
I played San Andreas through for the first time fully like just a couple of years ago on stream and stuff, and there were moments where it's like, this game is surprisingly difficult at times, so
it's unforgiving. And they have now added the option to be able to restart a mission instantly, which is very good, because that is one of the pains of those old games. And
100%
in my head, see, that's the I have such strong memories of San Andreas, loving it, but I don't remember a lot. I remember a few of the story beats for some reason, like when you first exit Los Santos, like that first section, there's a bit where you're like on a farm. In my head, that lasts forever. I bet it's like 2 missions now. I bet it doesn't last long at all, but I remember doing that for ages. Like, yeah, I just can't wait to play those games again.
For me, it's Vice. Like, Vice City was like a real pillar moment for, like, I was in year 9 when that came out.
That's
I can remember it being like, see, I'd played GTA 3, but GTA 3 I had on PC as a pirate version. My cousin got it me. But the save system didn't work on it. So I've played as a kid the first like 2 hours of GTA 3 a lot, but never any more than that. But Vice City was my first like GTA that I played like, you know, properly. But there was like a school kind of feud between groups where it was like, is the getaway going to be better? Or is Vice City going to be better?
That's aged well now, isn't it?
I was in the getaway camp because I really liked the like London BBC kind of crime drama element of it. And so I had the getaway for Christmas. And
sorry, Matt.
No, it's fine.
You got to visit Argos at least.
But I quite liked the getaway, but it is over and done within like 10 hours. So then with my Christmas money, I bought GTA, and I can remember getting GTA on kind of like maybe like 4 days after Christmas. And spending then that Christmas holiday, like getting really invested in that game.
Did you do like the stubborn child thing of like insisting to all your friends for months that Getaway was still there?
No. I was very much like, because when the GTA hype has taken over, it takes over, right? But I still have fond memories of the Getaway to this day.
I don't think it's a bad. Yeah. Like, it's just
a very different comparison. There's only one game
winner now.
Yeah. So remember the Getaway being very difficult to play as a kid. For some reason.
I don't remember. My main memory of like the big like feud between people is that I had a friend who was obsessed with calling me out on like, oh, The Getaway, and it's magical healing walls, because obviously that game, instead of having health packs, you leant up against the walls,
yeah,
and gradually you get your breath back. Well, what became fucking industry standard for like 10 years, eh? Was the sitting around and getting your breath back, and that'd heal
you. Didn't expect you to get so angry about the breathing. And
You got him there, man.
Yeah, exactly. I can't wait to play these games, and I'm happy they're coming out so soon, because I was really looking forward to playing the remastered, again, version of GTA 5 over this winter, and that got delayed, obviously, to early next year. So I'm glad these are coming out to tide me over, because I'm just fancying a bit of GTA.
Yeah. And you know what? I hope they do well enough to convince them that GTA 4 would be...
Absolutely. That is the one I want to play again, because it's a brilliant game. It just looks like mud.
The thing is, have you seen like what the PC mods can do to GTA 4? Like, that game looks like better than GTA 5 when it's modded. So like, they're up to the eyeballs.
Yeah.
And the idea of them being able to bring that kind of like... not full photorealism to it, because I think GTA needs to look somewhat cartoonish because of what the game is.
Yeah.
And I think that trilogy, that art style that they used to have for all the posters, which was very kind of like comic book, I think really suited that kind of heightened nonsense that GTA was always about. Like these larger than life crime kind of dramas that weren't so Scorsese, but were much more kind of like... Like they were piss takes of kind of as well as being in love with those films, they also lampooned them. And I just love that sort of style, and being able to inject that little bit of extra color into 4, which is kind of like, is the one that started to take it the Scorsese route, but still has, like, I think that's got a more heightened sense than 5 does.
Yeah,
I think 4 arguably has the best story of all of
probably
them?
Yeah,
isn't it like one of the longest GTAs as well? I remember taken ages to finish as a team.
It's long, but I remember the world not feeling as... the world didn't feel as huge to me as San Andreas, but like we said, it is a lot denser. It is just a city, really. There isn't that sort of like suburbs area as much. I would just happily play.
The thing I love about 4 is it's got that madness to it. You know, it's got kind of like characters like, is it Jacob the weed dealer?
Yeah, yeah. Just sells you guns as well and stuff.
Yeah, and you've got Roman who's constantly asking you to do all this mad kind of stuff. But like, the core of it is this really good, like, absolute deconstruction of the American dream. It's got this excellent kind of dark heart that's wrapped up in who's the mad bastard that's constantly trying to sell you bull shark testosterone.
Isn't his name like Frank? He's like the freaking roided out guy or something.
All of these very cartoony elements that I think make GTA's humor and like satire what it is, but at the center of it, this really horrible, nasty deconstruction of what America is. And I think to a degree, probably GTA 4 might be the best GTA that's been made. It's just its gameplay systems aren't as refined as like what 5 had.
Yeah.
I think I would still pick 5 personally as the better game. But 4, I'd love to play again. So yeah, please do that one. But we're not getting that one, sadly. Maybe we will at some point. We can only dream. From one thing full of nostalgia of childhood, from another, Buzz Lightyear's back, baby. Matt, me and you share a very special bond, as we're both very much Toy Story children at heart. This film, I went from when it was first being announced to being confused as to what the hell this film is, to now watching this trailer and being like, I'm all in. This looks incredible. I'm still confused as to what the hell the in-universe logic behind this is. So
I can help you then.
Yeah, yeah. We'll do it. It's called Lightyear, and it's Chris Evans, as far as I know, voicing the in-Toy Story universe version of the fictional character that inspired Buzz Lightyear. Mm.
So Pete Doctor, who is obviously Pixar's kind of chief creative kind of officer, explained this as when they made the original Toy Story, obviously there's all these kind of behind the scenes things that nobody knows about. But the idea was that Buzz Lightyear was the action figure from a movie that probably Andy would have watched. And this movie, Lightyear, is that film that the toy is based off. And the thing I love about that is, you know, when you get an action figure, like Star Wars action figures in particular, and you look at them, you're like, I know what they're mm-hmm. supposed to be, but they don't quite look like what they did in the movie. They're kind of like a little bit potato face. That's exactly what the Buzz Lightyear from Toy Story is to the Lightyear that they've made for the Lightyear movie. He looks like the fucking Doomslayer. His armor is amazing. And like the toy version is the slightly Fisher Price, not as detailed version of what you see in the film. I think that's a really cool, really smart
idea. I'm into it. So I feel like this is where the confusion has come through for some people. And I've cleared it up in my head now, is that, the toy is based on this fictional film. I think a lot of people think that Buzz, the Lightyear character they're seeing in Australia is supposed to be a real person that existed in the Toy Story world, which wouldn't make sense because they have far future tech and they're going through like Stargates and stuff. Mm.
That is because Chris Evans, when he tweeted first to say that he'd taken on the role, it was like, this is the real human that Buzz Lightyear is based on. So when there was only that one screenshot from Lightyear, I was like, oh, is this going to be like Pixar doing First Man and Buzz Lightyear was an astronaut? It's very clear from this trailer. No, this is Buzz Lightyear, the Space Ranger of Star Command. Mm-hmm. It's going to have aliens in it. It's got distant worlds.
Are we
going to
have Zurg is one?
Well, like, there's that Zurg's box, right? Up. You know, the box that turns up in the trailer that opens and the red light comes out. Yeah, yeah. I am convinced that's got Emperor Zurg in it.
And we've got to have the aliens. The aliens and Mr. Pilkapants are my two MVPs of the Toy Story series. I love them. Like, I hope we get... The thing is, if they're doing a similar thing with aliens as they did with Buzz, like, are the aliens going to be much more real... I said realistic the aliens. What the hell is a realistic alien? But, are they not going to be the funny little cutesy aliens we're used to?
Right, this is a big lore question then, Cardi. Is Pizza Planet affiliated with the Lightyear movie brand? Because I don't think they are. I don't think Pizza Planet's aliens have anything to do with Buzz Lightyear.
There's going to be a little Easter egg. Like, maybe, like, when he goes to space, like, the little sachet. Like, you know, in lots of, like, sci-fi, they have, like, the little mini, like, dehydrated pizza. Maybe that's a pizza planet. Or maybe, like, he's going to another planet and there's a city there and there's a Pizza Planet restaurant on this, on this alien city.
Like
maybe.
How in Demolition Man they like to talk about Taco Bell, right?
Exactly. Well, it depends what region you're in.
Well, yes.
But I just... All I know about this film is that it's almost guaranteed to make me want to cry.
That's what
Toy Story will do to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, it is... It's not a Toy Story film, is it? It's tangentially related to Toy Story.
It's a sci-fi movie. I hope
at the end it pulls out and like there's an advert for the actual action figure and stuff like they link it.
It's like final post credits needs to be. You've seen the movie, now buy the toy, and then it's just like Andy looking at the TV and just sort of like Because the thing I want to do is
looking film.
Yeah, like
as well,
it
for
looks
1995. that's when it came out.
Well, the thing is like, fuck it. Like, I can remember someone in our Slack group was sort of like trying to say, now, is Lightyear within the Toy Story mythos? Is it a live action movie or is it a CGI movie? And this is all just big galaxy brain questions we don't have to ponder. What I want to see is this be a super success, because I think Pixar is always at its best largely when it's doing original films rather than sequels. Toy Story being the exception to the rule, because I think all the Toy Story sequels are phenomenal. But this is a good way for them to be able to make another film that kind of riffs on completely different concepts while still holding, you know, the all-important IP element that means that it can be marketed well. So if this does well, I really like to see a Western that's Woody's Roundup. Like,
I feel like I've already seen... I feel like in Toy Story 2, I had enough of that, personally.
But that's the TV show. You know how kind of like...
I know
so
what you mean.
In my head...
Almost like,
this like is...
Tarantino's Leonardo DiCaprio show in Once Upon a Time Western, but Woody.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
My kind of like stupid brain is kind of thinking like... If Lightyear was the big budget movie that like was in at the cinemas, then the Buzz Lightyear of Star Command Disney cartoon TV show was like the cartoon spin-off they put on Saturday mornings. So Woody's Roundup could get rebooted as like this old 1950s show that gets rebooted as a Western in cinemas, and that would be the movie we get.
I want Quentin Tarantino's final film to be Woody's Roundup. That's what I've decided. And I would watch the hell out of that. Yeah, I mean, there's so many options. Maybe write into IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. What is the Toy Story, like, spin-off origin story you'd like to see? Maybe it's, I don't know, Mr. Potato Head in a version of Taxi Driver or something. Or, I don't know, like, Bo Peep on just, like, on a farm being sad. I don't know. Something like that. I mean, there's lots of options out there. Jurassic Park, but with Rex.
I mean, imagine if Rex was actually supposed to be like a junior's version of a Jurassic Park toy.
Oh, the options. I mean, what about the Etch-a-Sketch movie? God, the possibilities really are endless. Do write in if you have any ideas. Do you know what? It's been a while since I've done this, but I started it a few months ago now, probably. Here are a few films from the 1980s that you may not have seen. You may well have seen. You probably have seen. But if you haven't, you should see them. That is the title of this segment. Basically, non-completely obvious 80s films. So you're not going to get E.T. You're not going to get, you know, other 80s films. You're going to get these ones that you should watch if you hadn't. So first up, we've got The King of Comedy. Have either of you watched The King of Comedy? Mm-hmm.
I have not.
It's a very good film to see. I think you'd like it. It's one of arguably one of Scorsese's lesser known films, but one of the ones that people always, like, when they list their top five Scorsese's, a lot of people put it in there as kind of like an avant-garde choice. It was definitely one of the two main inspirations for Joker.
I was going to say that's the one film I heard continuously throughout Joker. Yeah.
It's got big vibes. Yeah, you've basically got vibes. It's got big vibes, mate. It's just got big vibes. You've got kind of Robert De Niro, who's like an aspiring comic, but like he's trying to achieve success, but he kind of does that in unconventional ways by kind of being a bit criminal about it. It's just a very, very odd film. It's quite unsettling. It's in many ways, I wouldn't say it's as dark as Joker. It's more of a dark comedy. It's kind of like, yeah. It's a bit lighter than that, but yeah, still a very good film if you haven't watched that. Another one we've got, Blue Velvet, which is very much a Marmite film. judging by your reaction there, Matt, are you not a Blue Velvet fan?
I wouldn't say I'm not a Blue Velvet fan, but it's a watch, isn't it? Like, that's a watch with a capital W.
I'm trying to broaden people's horizons here. It's a David Lynch film, which kind of off the bat tells you what sort of thing you might be getting, which is weird. It's like, it starts off with kind of like the discovery of like a severed human ear found in a field. Okay. And like someone has to, Carl McLachlan then is kind of like investigating it, and it's related to like this mysterious kind of nightclub singer. Has one of the most terrifying performances of all time by Dennis Hopper, who is just an absolute freak in that film. But if you're looking for a weird, disturbing film on a Friday night, check out Blue Velvet. Not my favorite. It's not as good as Mulholland Drive, if you ask me. But still, you know, I think it's like one you should see. Another one, The Untouchables. Kind of I feel like often the forgotten kind of gangster film, because it's more of a police film than a gangster film in a way. It's got I've completely forgotten what's the name. Kevin Costner as Elliot Ness, the lead detective, trying to take down Al Capone, basically. And it's got a great cast. You've got Robert De Niro again as Al Capone, actually, and you've got Sean Connery has a great role in it. There's some great moments in that film, some great death scenes, and yeah, you'd like that one, Jesse. I think you recently watched Heat for the first time, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you decided to slag off Al Pacino, one of the greatest actors of all time.
His acting in that film is like just off the wall.
Brilliant. Man. Yeah, he's mad. That is peak Pacino. You just want him screaming about ass. That is what I want from Al Pacino.
Oh man.
It's amazing.
Classic.
Oh, he's so good. Heat is an absolute banger. But that's not an 80s film, so Heat is worthless. Exactly. Got a couple more. These last two are going to be a double bill, because they're kind of two edges of the same blade. You've got Planes, Trains and Automobiles and Midnight Run. Both kind of similar in a way. So Planes, Trains, Automobiles is a straight-up comedy. If you haven't watched it, it's about a man, like quite a curmudgeonly man in Steve Martin, trying to get home for Thanksgiving. And, you know, it's that sort of thing. Everything goes wrong, like plane cancelled, car breaks down, train goes wrong, like can't get home for Thanksgiving. And you've got John Candy, who is just amazing in this film. He's just kind of a really sweet, sort of innocent man who's also trying to get home to the same place and kind of tags along. But he's just kind of inherently a very annoying person without trying to be. Like, he's very well intentioned. It's just such a funny film and quite a sweet film. So, yeah. And it's, we're coming up to Thanksgiving, aren't we, very soon?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me in my head, this is always quite a Christmassy film, despite it not being set at Christmas.
Well, it's because we don't have Thanksgiving, right? And our nearest equivalent would be Christmas.
Have you seen Plane, Trains, and Automobiles, Jesse?
Nope.
Have you seen any of these films?
Don't think I have, no.
Get it going. Get it going. And I said it's a double bill of Midnight Run because that's a very similar film in a way that it's kind of a cross-country buddy movie, but in a way it's not a buddy movie. You've got Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin, who sadly passed away last year, I think. And it's kind of the similar thing, is that Robert De Niro is like he's a bounty hunter who is trying to basically get Charles Grodin to the person who's hired him to capture him, basically, because he's embezzled like 15 million or something. And it's kind of like Robert De Niro trying to escort this man across the country and get him here before midnight, while also being hunted by the FBI and some gangsters. And it's just, it's a comedy action film, and it kind of inspired so many films of the last 20 years, like Fast and Furious, like all of those like sort of action films also lean into humor quite a bit. Like, yeah. I feel like this was one of the first to do that. And people, I don't feel like people have seen Midnight Run enough. And that would be my number one suggestion from this list. If you haven't watched Midnight Run, enjoy Midnight Run, because it's got some great action, some great comedy. It's just very good. Robert De Niro is funniest as well.
I feel like I haven't seen many Robert De Niro films now that I'm trying to think about it. Like Deer Hunter. I've seen Deer Hunter, Goodfellas.
Godfather Part 2.
I'm certain I've seen that when I was much younger, but I can't remember much of Godfather 2 or 3.
Taxi Driver?
Yeah, I've seen that. But I feel like there's a lot more films of his. Like, I haven't seen Raging Bull.
Oh, there's tons. He's amazing in Raging Bull. I don't necessarily love that film that much.
Okay.
But he's incredible in it. From, like, 1970 to 1995, like, he was untouchable. There are so many good films there. But, yeah, there you go. Those are my suggestions. But, yeah, pop Midnight Run on this weekend and have a lovely time. That's my suggestion. Do you know what we'll do, though, right now is love a lovely time with The Endless Search. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games, gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games, gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. It's The Endless Search. Do you want to play a game? Happy Why Halloween, not? Everyone. Oh, you've ruined the Saw joke. Well, why not? Imagine in Saw if the lad just went, yeah, why not? Yeah, why not? Yeah, I'll chop my own foot off. Why not?
He's fairly brave of him.
Exactly. I bet you've seen all the Saw films.
I really have not. I've only seen the first one. All the rest seem to be complete shite.
First two are very good, I think.
Okay.
Then they fall really far off the deep end. But yeah, we're going to play the Metacritic game, just because I think we all enjoyed that one so much. It's simple. I've got 5 topics here. And it's simple. It's a mixture of games and films. Basically, I want you to take turns at picking the highest Metacritic score in each of these categories. So I want the highest one you can think of for all of these films and games. And the first topic is going to be any game. And do you know what? Matt's going to go first. Matt's going to pick first round. Any game with a playable animal.
With a playable animal?
Yeah,
ooh.
And that does include like humanized animals as well, like ones that can speak. So a playable animal of some sort. Gonna think of some animals. You've got sharks, you've got pigs, you've got birds.
So
there's some examples of animals for you.
So we're going to try and find the highest rated one.
You want the highest Metacritic score for a game where you play. Doesn't it have to be as the whole game? Just you can play as an animal for 1 minute in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Will
as
you
long
trust
as you are controlling,
me?
Controlling an animal.
Will you trust me if I just do a quick Google to check if this game does do this that I'm thinking of?
Well, you can say it and I can tell you. I can be the judge if you want.
Okay.
I'll let you have a second guess if it is incorrect.
So I think Divinity Original Sin 2 has a like a druid class where you can turn into like a bear or a spider.
Oh shit.
And then you can move, and then you can move around the board.
Yeah,
I mean, you must know that game more than most people.
But I don't tend to play as druids and stuff like that. So
okay, got you. I don't know what the easiest way to check that is.
Just check if Divinity has a druids class, basically, with a good animal transform in it.
You know that game very well.
You can do pet pal, can't you? But that's just speaking.
That's speaking to animals.
Aminals. The druid.
I've got mine, but I'll wait. I'll wait till it's my turn.
You can summon a pet. Can you transform?
You can play as a lizard bloke, innit?
That counts, yeah, right? But the lizards are like a species within the game rather than an actual animal. Yeah.
Fair enough.
You can polymorph. So can
what
you...
does polymorph allow you to polymorph into?
So we're getting deep. I didn't expect to go deep into the.
I think polymorph only gives you like tentacles or wings and stuff like that.
Let's just say yes.
I'm not sure you can. You know, though.
So what I will then say is,
yeah, I'm not 100% sure there. So yeah. I'm gonna be harsh and I'm gonna disallow it.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. I'm on the same route though in my head. So does Dragon Age Origins?
Can you just say one that definitely bloody does?
I've only got half memories. I don't really play games where I can.
What do I search for that? Play as animal in Dragon Age Origins.
Animal forms.
And by the way, a dragon is not an animal.
No, I know that.
Oh, this is good.
Can you shapeshift? Okay, you can shapeshift into the form of an animal.
Oh. There we go.
Okay.
I think.
Morrigan, I'm fairly sure, can turn like into like bears and
shit. Okay. You can have Dragon Age Origins just so we can just get
Dragon Age Origins.
Fantastic. Can I lock in my answer?
If you feel oh, by the way, actually Matt, I need to know what format you want Dragon Age Origins on. PC. Okay. Yes, go on, Jesse Gomez.
Untitled Goose Game.
Oh, of course. Yeah, Jesse gets that.
I don't.
Everybody
know,
fucking
I don't know
loved
you
that
do.
Game.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think you do. What format do you want that on?
Oh shit, PC.
Okay.
I feel like Dragon Age.
I'm gonna tell you, it doesn't matter what you do here. I would have gone GTA 5 because you can transform into animals via the peyote. If you eat the peyote, you can control.
Really?
You can fly around as a bird.
Birds, right? Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's lots of different animals. Dragon Age Origins has a Metascore of 91.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a win.
Untitled Goose Game, only 79.
Oh, really?
People fucking loved Goose Game.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was super great.
Absolutely fine. Yeah, it's a 7 out of 10 game.
I know Maneater came to mind, but I was like, that game's shit. So.
Yeah, I don't think you would have worried about that.
Can you search up just Okami for me? Because I was thinking that as well.
I mean, Okami would have been a good one. Would have been a very good one.
Yeah.
Let me have a look. Okami. The PC one of Okami. PS2 one, actually, is the highest. That's a 93.
Mm-hmm. So, the only other one I could think of was... Remember Tokyo Jungle? Was that what it was
called?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yep. That was PS3, wasn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Mm.
Could I Crash Bandicoot? Could have got a lot of games. Right, 1-0 to Matt. Let's not
think
get bogged
mascots.
Down from this. So... I want the highest rated Harrison Ford film you can think of. There's a few to pick from.
There's
been a lot of good films.
Okay.
Can he be a supporting
character?
It's
just in the film. Yeah, it's just in the film. Which, if you're along the right lines of what I'm thinking there, there's an absolute banger you could pick.
I mean, I'm just going to go for Star Wars A New Hope. Because, like...
Go for A New Hope.
Because surely that has to be, like... fucking 100 or some bullshit.
I've got A New Hope. What is your answer, Matthew?
Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, he's gone for 2049.
Air Force One.
See, I would have gone Apocalypse Now.
I can't remember him in that.
Briefly. He's in it for like 2 minutes at the start.
That's a good shout.
Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, has a 90 on Metacritic.
Just a 90?
A 90.
That seems well low.
Blade Runner 2049. A lot of people didn't like this as much as us, sadly, Matt. It's an 81.
Yeah, see, the thing is, as I thought, is because I can remember Blade Runner didn't, the original Blade Runner didn't launch to particularly great reviews. No. Like, it was fairly middling. It's a cult film. And so I just thought 2049 might have had the edge.
Apocalypse Now at 94. So I would have won, but I'm not playing. So there we go. That's one all. Three more to play. I want any published Square Enix game. Or Square, when they were Square. Square or Square Enix. But bear in mind, Metacritic doesn't actually go that far back.
Yeah.
So any Square Enix game. And that goes first. I feel like there may be a series we hone in on here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just... I... Does it go back as far as PlayStation 1?
Sometimes not, like PS2.
Can I test a PlayStation 1 game and just see if
Yeah, you can test it.
Final Fantasy 9.
Final Fantasy 9.
But it's got to be the PlayStation 1. I don't want, like, the PC port or anything like that. If they don't have
Final
the PlayStation...
Final Fantasy 9 doesn't seem to be there.
Have you done it in Roman numerals as well?
Oh, I know. So you don't want... They do have the iOS version.
No, it can't be that. Because they're
instant
garbage.
Lose.
It would have to be the original. If it's not there, can I try Final Fantasy X?
Okay.
Because that's a PS2 one.
Final Fantasy X. Oh, it's so hard. See, it doesn't actually... starts listing in a random order when I type in 10. If I put in X, does that help?
Probably is an X is probably the best way to find it.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. Oh, Schmidt, do you know what? Final Fantasy 9 has now popped up. So you can have it on the original PlayStation if you want.
You going for that?
I have now found it on PlayStation.
You know what? I'm going to go for PlayStation 10. Sorry, it's not PlayStation. PlayStation 10. Final Fantasy X on the PlayStation 2 is what I think I'm going to go for.
Final Fantasy X on PS2, you said. I have got that. Jesse?
Can I have whatever the latest version of Nier Automata is? Cause it got
Automata,
that's it.
That's a very good shout, Jesse.
Because that got released on, what was it? Current gen, right? For the new release?
No. It's got, I think it would have been the Becomers Gods edition, maybe?
I thought it was like...
Is that the one you want? On Xbox One? The newest version of Nier? Is that the newest? I don't know. Is that what you want?
Is there a PS4 version?
So it's only ever been released on PS4 and Xbox One.
Yeah, there is a PS4 version.
Can I go for the PS4 version instead?
You can. I'll tell you. Again, doesn't make a difference. Final Fantasy X on PS2, a 92 on Metacritic.
Oh, snap.
Close, though. Near PS4, 88.
Oh, okay.
So it was a close one. Still
fair
very
enough.
Good.
Mm.
2-1 to Matt. 2 to play.
You're going to the OG
let's
classics.
Let's get this going. Right. It's another film one. And this time, I talked about 80s film. Is there a mile? In my head, when I think about 80s film, I think of one man, and that's Mr. Tom Cruise. Can you tell me the highest rated Tom Cruise film you can think of? And it is Jesse to go first on this one. Mr. Thomas Cruise.
Just from whatever year, right?
Yeah, any Tom Cruise film.
I want to say the first Mission Impossible. I can't think you can go wrong with that.
We'll go for Mission Impossible.
2017's The Mummy. Let's go.
Are you going with 2017's
The Mummy? Absolutely not.
Mission Impossible... Let me find that. Cause I'm
did that have a subtitle to it, or is it just Mission Impossible?
Mission Impossible is just Mission Impossible.
Yeah, it's Mission Impossible until 3. It's MI2,
right.
MI3.
Matthew,
do I stick within the Mission Impossible series, or do I branch out?
Rogue. Rogue Nation, even.
I fucking love Rogue Nation.
That is one of my...
Is that the Brad Bird one? The one where he goes
That's Ghost Protocol.
Is it? I thought they were the other way around. But whatever, I really like the one where the Brad Bird...
The Burj Khalifa's Ghost Protocol, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know.
Four.
Whichever the one is where he goes up the skyscraper.
The
Burj.
That's four. That's a really good one.
That's a cracking film, that is.
Yeah.
But instead... No, I'm going to go Top Gun.
He's going Top Gun.
Battle of the Giants.
I'm just trying to think if Top Gun was, like, enjoyed when it came out.
I think it was enjoyed. I don't know if it was a major critical...
I'll be curious to see how Tropic Thunder is, because he is in that, but it's not necessarily a Tom Cruise film.
Wow, this is a... There we go. Surprising film, both of these, to be honest. Okay, Mission Impossible, the first one, is a 59 on Metacritic.
I thought it wasn't that great.
Really?
I like it. I think that's slightly harsh. I would give that high 60s, early 70s. Even weirder, Top Gun, 50.
Really?
Not critically, you know. I mean, it's so I recently watched Top Gun for the first time, like 2 weeks ago. Really enjoyed it. Really fun film. Is it a great film? I'm not sure, but I really enjoyed it. So
when it comes to Metacritic and like for old films or games, does it put in reviews from the time? Or is it?
I don't know. I'm not getting into that. Yeah. Let's have a look. We've got a review from Empire. I don't know what that was. Yeah, it's got Gene Siskel's review from back in the day. Roger Ebert's review as well. Roger Ebert gave it a 63. So it could be there's a lot of 30s and 40s there. People didn't like it at the time, obviously. There we go, though. So that's a...
But Edge of Tomorrow probably did better. All.
I mean, it's all to play for.
Ooh, I would maybe have gone for like a Magnolia just because, you know, I'm a Paul Thomas Anderson stan.
Jack Reacher.
To be fair, probably Mission Impossible Fallout, probably. That review.
I can't believe they're that low.
Yeah, surprisingly. I think films do generally do low. Like, films you think are good still get a lower Metacritic than games you think.
Way more film critics and way more publications taken for a Metacritic on a film than there is on games. Like, the actual games media is surprisingly small compared.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. So
we are tied at 2-2 on the last one, and it is one that I don't think it's going to cause controversy, because we'll work it out like gentlemen. But I want any game with a zombie or undead-like creature in it. So they don't have to be called a zombie, but we would say, oh, yeah, they're zombies, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, they might not call them a zombie in the game, but, you know, they're really zombies. So, and it's Matt to go first.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some big hitters here.
I am going to go with the Resident Evil 2 remake.
Oh, see, that is not where I thought you were going. But,
Yep.
What are you going with?
I mean, Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube, then.
Oh, Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube.
That has to be it.
So my... I would have gone either Resident Evil 4, or I would have gone The Last of Us.
Yeah, I'll see that as well.
So here we go. Resident Evil 2 remake, Matt, is a 91
on Metacritic.
Resident Evil 4 on GameCube, though, I think is one of the highest Metacritic scores you can get. It's a 96.
Okay.
People like that game. Yeah. It's a narrow victory for Jesse. This is your game of choice, though. You are good at the Metacritic one. I feel like you win this one almost every time you play. So, a valiant effort, Matt, but sadly fell short on this occasion.
Would I have You'll got be back it if next I'd week, Last maybe. Of Us 2?
Surely Last you would
have
won.
Last of Us 2.
Which oh, no, because Last of Us 2 was super divisive.
No, well, not amongst critics as it wasn't. It was pretty much universally.
You know what? Last of Us 1, 95.
Wow.
Last of Us Part 2, 93. So neither of those would have beaten Resi 4. I think Resi 4 might be unbeatable. Maybe Days Gone scored higher. It did.
That's funny.
There we go.
Those freakers.
Yeah, that's such a dumb name.
That's not a good thing to call our audience who have sent in feedback for this week to IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. I've said that email a lot, and I'll say it again.
I think six times so far.
We've got, if you've been counting,
I'm just like taking an educated guess. I think 5 or 6 times, maybe.
Do you know what? Spend less time counting, spend more time reading this email you've got.
This is from Jack Booth, and he says, "Hi, IGN crew. Been listening for years, but never had a reason to write until now. Just heard your conversation about whether video game rental companies still exist. Only play single-player story-driven games as I'm generally pretty shit at them and get bent over backwards by anyone I play online, so I used to trade in after completing the campaign." That's fair enough. After buying my PS5, rather, I winced at the £70 price tags of all games, so I was looking at rental options. A quick Google came up with a company called Boomerang. Since joining 4 months ago, I've rented Ghost of Tsushima, Mario 3D World, Resi Village, Returnal, Skyward Sword, and the new Ratchet & Clank. It cost me $10.99 a month, so you can do the maths on how much money I've potentially saved. I've loved every game I've had so far, apart from Returnal. That ball-breaking arsehole of a game can burn in hell. Anyway, I hope that's helped some of your listeners save some money, if there's one, and if they're one and done like me, Jack.
We actually had quite a few people writing to recommend Boomerang. So there we go. There is the rental service.
That seems pretty reasonable if you're banging out these games.
That's a good deal, £11.
These games.
I assume, is it like... So I remember like when these services used to exist, it's like one at a time and you have to send it back before you get another one. I imagine it's like that rather than like, like you can order... Maybe there's different tiers. You can have like 3 at a time or something like that. I haven't done my research.
But, let's have a look. But that's really good price.
I assume like you can get through... Let's say you're getting through a game a month, even 2 games a month. That's still a good deal. So you're paying, $10.99 to play one game or £6 to play a game.
It's basically just like a little version of Game Pass or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mail involved, I guess.
Returnal, you can now, they've added the update, so you can now suspend mid-run, which is, I think, is that something at launch they said they couldn't do? Or I don't know. No, or is it, I don't know if they said it.
I think it's mad it took them this long to add a photo mode, because that game is beautiful.
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought there was a photo mode at launch. I'm surprised there wasn't, because that is a beautiful game that you'd want to take photos of.
Absolutely.
It is a hard game, I will give it that. Thank you for that. Jack. Matt.
Yeah, I got one here from Chris Emery, who says, "First time writing into anything like this, but your podcast has helped me massively over the past 18 months with my mental health and keeping me sane during the dark Rona times. There were other podcasts too, but they pale in comparison to the almighty awesomeness that is Cardi with his luscious locks and band of merry IGN crew in tights."
I promise I didn't write this.
Okay, sure. Personally, I've never worn tights, but I can't say the same for Jesse.
I'm sure they're comfy.
With the hype of the new Batman movie, I'm holding off watching the trailers as I want to experience everything on the big screen, and, to be honest, I was sold at the first teaser with Batterson beating the fucking shit out of that one guy. It got me thinking about how fucking annoying the scene in The Dark Knight Rises is, where Jason Gordon-Levitt's character's real name is revealed. I remember sitting in the cinema, loving every second of Dark Knight Rises, until that scene, where I let out a big, "Oh, fuck off," the dismay of every other cinema goer. Has there been any movie that you folks have watched and been really into for it to be sort of fucked up by one scene? As always, keep up the amazing work, and respect to that moist liquid between lands. Chris, age 34 and a half, from Stirling, Scotland. Oh, and one final thing. Someone needs to tell Big Thomas Muller to pull his finger out, get his shit together, and bring back the Mississippi Mud Pie. That was just the absolute dog's bollocks.
Mississippi Mud Pie Muller Corner was very good. I don't think Thomas Muller, FC Bayern München footballer, has much influence over that, but we can get in touch to see if he can do anything about that. That whole Robin thing at the end of Dark Knight Rises is just a bit silly. It's just a bit
why
silly,
was that bad? Because I remember watching that in the cinema, but I don't have many memories
of
Robin.
It's just like out of nowhere. It's just like, why? Like, why did
but
you
his name's
that?
Not Robin. That's
is it meant to be a fun little joke? Were they potentially thinking, we've got a spin-off here if we want?
But the point is his name's not fucking Robin. Like, everybody else in that unit, in the Chris Nolan universe, like, he's not called Batman, he's called fucking Bruce Wayne. Why is his name not Dick Grayson? Like, if they were going to put that Easter egg in, it should have been, what's your name?
It would be
Dick Grayson.
He walked up and he went and just called him a dick. He's like, Dick. So it's the last word of that film was just Dick.
But that's what his fucking name is.
Yeah, it is a bit mad. I don't know why they did it. It was a bit cheesy. Like, I don't dislike The Dark Knight Rises as much as some. I think it's an enjoyable film. Obviously, nowhere near as good as the first two Batman Nolan films, but I think it's okay. But yeah, that bit, it's just cheese at the end. I don't know what they were thinking with that.
I think the entire last third of that film is cheese. It goes from like this weird politically plotted thing into a race against time to deactivate a bomb. It's so kind of like 1980s Batman at the end.
I haven't watched it in a while. Maybe I need to revisit. Maybe I do. But I don't know if I've had I don't know if I've had that sort of reaction where a whole film... One that rings a bell for me is when we saw Captain Marvel.
Okay.
I think it's an okay film. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, the needle drop towards the end where they play Just a Girl by No Doubt. I thought that was so on the nose. And I was like, are we doing this? Like, I was just over it. I was over the pop music needle drops in Marvel films at that point. I was just like, this doesn't really make... I don't know. That didn't work for me. I was a bit like, ugh, come on.
I think for me, Rise of Skywalker, when... Post as like somehow Palpatine returned, and I was like, that's just so
in my so head lazy. Rise of Skywalker was the one that came to the end, but not because it was going okay and then they said something. I think literally the very second set of words that come up in that screen, so you get the long time ago in a galaxy far away, the fucking first line of the opening crawl, which is the dead speak exclamation mark.
Oh yeah, that was
from
very
that point. I was like, this film's gonna be fucking garbage, isn't it? What was it?
The dead speak. It's funny. It's funny in hindsight.
Mm-hmm. But no, I can't think of anything that kind of like I was with it up until a moment.
Mm.
Again, write in if you've got any scenes that have just or moments that have ruined an otherwise good film for you. Jesse, what's the email address again? Don't say I've said it too many times. So you can't even remember, mate.
It's Go past on. My head. Rise of Skywalker's hurt me.
IGN.com. I've got one last email here from Aoife Hughes, who says, "Hi all, first time, long time here. I just wanted to pose a question to everyone. Have you ever played a game and made up your own challenges to extend the life of a game? For example, the Nuzlocke challenge in Pokemon or the crazy naked attempts in Souls games." Recently, with some classic games receiving updates like Skyrim and the GTA trilogy, I've wanted reasons to go back to these games without knowing I'll just fall into ruts of boredom and not fully experience them or have the fun that I want or remember having with them. To challenge myself with Skyrim, I built a little challenge generator. It tells you random skills you need to main, what quest should be your focus, your race, and some fun character quirks, like if your character is afraid of horses. Have you, on the podcast today, ever made yourself play a game in a self-stated challenge for some extra fun? Anyway, I love the podcast and listen every week. Often, I'm refreshing on a Friday to check if it's out yet on my podcast app.
That's wicked.
Sorry if it sometimes takes too long, but we have to record on Friday sometimes. Mm. We'll always be there. We'll never miss a day. All the best from Aoife. I don't know if I feel like people did this a lot more maybe back in the day when trophies weren't a thing and achievements in games, like you'd extend the life of a game by trying to...
These are pretty common like on people, Twitch, right?
Yeah, like, people... That, yeah, I'm saying people still do them these days, but like trophies kind of have almost created some of that for some people.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, I'm trying to think, like, have you ever done that?
Not personally. I know in The Sims, like, the build challenges are a fucking massive part of what that game is. Like, people coming up with, like, do the 100 baby challenge or the, like, you can only live in a room that's, like, 5x5 and stuff like that.
What is the 100 baby challenge?
You have to have 100 babies.
Wow. What, endless. From one couple?
I think so, yeah.
Endless spawn.
That is unhealthy. I mean, that is actually technically impossible in the human lifespan, I would say.
Well, consider it takes 9 months to produce
unless
one.
Unless you had several, like, quintuplets or something, and, like, bulk, basically.
I'm not a Sims expert here. I'm just saying what I've heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, for me, like, a knife-only run in Resident Evil games, that's kind of like a OG classic for that series. Doing that with Resident Evil 4 VR, just because it's a bit of fun.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I've...
Have you ever, like, maybe stuck to, like, maybe one weapon in, like, maybe a Fallout game or any kind of game, just something like that? Not allowing yourself to sprint.
So I'm not really one to replay games. And even when I try and tell myself, like, the second time I played Red Dead 2, I was like, I'm going to be evil, Arthur. I'm going to be horrible. I just couldn't do it.
Wow.
Just ended up being
good.
That
was literally
good.
My
like,
first playthrough.
I was like, he's too good a man. He's too honorable in my eyes.
Emotional game.
Do it. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, again, write in to the podcast. I'm going to say the email address again. It's in the description of the podcast on your app if you need to read it. But yeah, another enjoyable episode. What track from the Guardian soundtrack are we
Before we go, Cardi, we had some feedback the other, I think it was last week, about a charity stream. We said we'd give it out. So Andrew Voke is doing charity for Scope, which is a disability charity. His streams start on November 1st and run through to November 7th. And he's starting there. Most of them are starting at 8 p.m. UK time. And you can go to twitch.tv/Drucula_V, which is capital DREWCULA_V. That'll get you to Andrew. He's doing a platinum run for Deathloop on November the 1st. Ooh. He's doing some Ghost of Tsushima, he's doing horror games, he's doing Guardians of the Galaxy, and It Takes Two. It sounds fun, and you can help make good stuff for charity.
From that the sounds 1st wicked. November, so that's this Monday coming up. There we go. Do that if you are so inclined. Which Guardian song do we want? There's a few. I mean, I opened the podcast with a bit of Wham, Wake Me Up Before You Go Go. Mm-hmm. The reason I do it, like, that song will always, the opening of that song is like, burned into my brain, because I had, from like a young age, had this like kind of toy, like not really toy, it was just like a miniature like Casio keyboard that I used to play around with, and whenever you press the demo button on that keyboard, it would play Wake Me Up Before You Go Go.
That's sick.
It would do the instrumental for that, so that is burned into my brain, that song. So maybe we do a bit of Wham, like, for the end.
Decision's been made.
Bit of Wham if you want. My personal choice would have been White Wedding, but you do what you do.
I'm at the same time.
I am vetoing it with some Wham. It's a great soundtrack. Yeah. This was fun. Let's have a bit of Wham.
Why not?
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.